If tomorrow starts without me, there's something you should know. While I hold you close, never let you go.
Hello and welcome to The Broken Pack, a podcast focused on giving adult survivors of sibling loss a platform to share their stories and to be heard, something that many sibling loss survivors state that they never have had. Sibling loss is misunderstood. The Broken Pack exists to change that and to support survivors. I'm your host, Dr. Angela Dean. In this episode, I had the pleasure of talking with Eddie about the loss of his brother, Richard, their relationship, and what it meant to lose him, as well as how that impacted his work, his life, and so much more. I hope that you enjoy this discussion.
You never know, you just never know.
Welcome. I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about who you are, and we'll go from there.
Cool. Well, I'm Eddie. And I am a psychotherapist in private practice here in Miami, Florida. I'm also married, just got married last year, and to my partner of almost 30 years, and we decided to get married. So we did that. I also have two kids, twin boys that just turned 33 yesterday. Yikes. and I also have five grandkids. So, and Umberto has two kids and two grandkids. So we have a total of seven grandkids together. So,
super busy family.
Super busy. We're a really large family on both sides. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for that. Before we talk about your loss, I'm wondering if you could tell me a little bit about Richard and what it was like growing up, and you have other siblings. So whatever you want to say about that.
Yeah, we're six siblings, and I'm number four in order, and he was 1 year younger than me, so he was number five. Out of all the siblings, it's interesting, right? Because in terms of perspective, we're the closest, but we were the closest in having more in-depth conversations. Mm. He was closer to my brothers when it came to football and poker and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I was the best man of his wedding when he got married. He was the godfather of my kids. So we were definitely close as we were growing up, and definitely for most of our adult life, even though we didn't live in the same area, we still had a lot of conversation and talked a lot about life and all the things that siblings talk about.
So it sounds like emotionally you were closer to him than your other siblings.
Yeah, sure.
And then, so you recently got married, which I was so happy for you. But I was wondering what it was like to not have him there.
It was a little weird. There's like the void that's there, right? So we had a really small wedding in New York. We decided to get married in New York. My dad's family lives, most of them live in that area, in the Northeast area, in New York, New Jersey. So I invited some of them. My cousin had just died 2 months before my brother, from my dad's family as well. And she was only 40 years old. Mm. So my uncle and my aunt were there at the wedding. So it was pretty palpable, right? Like the loss that we've all had. My dad also passed away 4 years ago. My grandmother, my dad's mom passed away also 2 years ago. So there's been a lot of death, a lot of loss. And I think that's a great question in terms of how do we manage, how do we mourn, and then also how do we continue to enjoy life?
Right.
And have joy. And it's definitely challenging.
Right. Because grief itself is the reaction to loss, but that doesn't mean that it's always a negative reaction. And so I think that's a great point. How do you find the joy?
Yeah.
Have you been able to do that?
Yeah. I mean, I think Mother's Day just passed and my mom came to my house and my brothers, my other siblings were here. And it was just a small group. My aunt and uncle came and everybody was talking about my brother. There's no way you can't, right? Like it's there. Oh, he's not here. So everybody's aware of it. So the conversation's there. There's moments of sadness. And then my mom just jumps up and, oh, can you play me some music, please? And so I'll play music and then she'll kind of like feel happy for a moment. But I know deep down inside, she was really, really sad.
Yeah.
And I think as I actually, the time has passed and I'm learning more about grief and mourning, I think grief, it's like tricky, right? And it's unpredictable.
Absolutely.
And, yeah. And it's definitely not what we learned in school in terms of a Kubler-Ross that we're just going to go through these linear stages of mourning. That's not the way it happens.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because that theory was about chronically ill patients anticipating their own loss and death, not about grieving someone that died. There's similarities, of course, but it's not completely applicable to grieving a person because, like you said, it comes in waves or hits us in different perspectives.
We also wonder now if we're, in some ways, we're going to mourn forever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we stop mourning.
You don't.
I know that it's not like when my brother died, right? 2 years ago. That's different. That we were in shock when that happened. We're all in a different place, but I feel like the mourning is still there. Like those moments, like at Mother's Day, that thread, like you can feel it. It's palpable. It's there. Oh, this person is missing. He's not here.
Absolutely.
And it brings in the wave of emotions again.
Right. Do you think it's more about learning to live with your grief than it is what our society tells us? You grieve and then you're done. I guess that's the difference between mourning and grieving.
I'm not sure. Yeah. I don't believe what society tells us about grieving and mourning. I think that's unrealistic. I think that's the way it is in our society. There's, oh, you lose someone, you're supposed to cry for a certain amount of days. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, you should just be okay and just continue to live your life and not feel that again. And that to me is what is incongruent with what happens inside of me. So that's like my internal struggle with people telling me that when they talk about mourning or grieving, that it should be a certain way. That's not my experience. And doesn't seem real.
Well, I think the more that people are talking about grief, or at least the more that I've been learning about grief, that I think what you're saying is becoming the norm. So hopefully this will shift in who knows how long, but in the future, that people will understand that grief is ongoing.
And I don't know if anybody's going to agree with this statement, but I also wonder, can loss ever be fully processed? I'm not sure. I think as humans that these people, our siblings, we go through life together. We grew up, whether everybody gets married and goes off and does their life, but there is something that's there that's been there during a really critical time of our lives, our childhood.
Mm-hmm.
But we have these experiences that we share. We don't share with other people. So, yeah.
Which you've had a lot of loss in the last few years.
Yeah.
And I think what makes sibling loss unique, not harder or easier or any of those things, I'm not comparing them, but I think what makes it unique is that we are supposed to, you were supposed to be there for the rest of your life, mostly with Richard until he was older and he's not.
I think there's the fantasy, right? Like your mom and dad are going to pass and then the older siblings are going to start dying. And eventually we know like, we know we're going to die, but I don't know. There's a fantasy, right? Like in our heads around the way it's going to happen or the way we want it to happen.
Precisely.
Yeah. And then life takes a turn and disrupts all of that.
Well, it's an out of order loss, as it's called in literature, right?
Yeah.
I want to ask you this question, but then I do want to hear the story of your loss and where you are. But how did grieving and mourning that is obviously ongoing, how has that compared to what you learned or thought you knew as a therapist?
I think one of the biggest learnings for me was that we can't do this by ourselves and we need other humans to bear witness and accompany us in this emotional journey of loss and mourning. And I think that, I don't know if it's our profession, maybe, and also our culture around how mourning is a private, lonely experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're supposed to do it and cry a certain way and then go home and cry at home. It almost feels a little bit like there's shame. Like you do it by yourself or you do it at home or you don't really put yourself out there that much. And I think what I've learned mostly is how I've reached out to like close friends and asked for support and talked about how I felt and talked about my feelings and where I was during that time. So I think that was the most helpful. And what I really like mostly, I guess in some way, decided that I was going to handle this differently than the way I'm supposed to in terms of the norm.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there were cultural differences in what you expected from a traditional American perspective? That is true that people don't talk about loss. I shared this in my own story in various places that my culture growing up was different. Did you feel that way at all with your larger family?
Well, absolutely. Richard's wife is American, white American. Mm-hmm. So she was completely different, which that's part of also what happened after he died. It was different than what we were used to experiencing when someone passed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can tell you more about that.
Yeah, that'd be great. Whatever you're willing to share.
Yeah. So I'll get into the story a little bit then, just in terms of like order. Richard had a heart attack on Friday. He left Friday morning and got in the car. He's about maybe 5 minutes from I-95 here. And he got right on I-95 and called his wife right away that he thought he was having a heart attack and he had pain in his chest and he was getting off and calling 911, which he did. And fire rescue came and they took him to the hospital and he was having a heart attack. That was Friday and they wanted to do open heart surgery immediately. And they did. And he was in really, really critical condition. And he made it through Friday. Saturday, they had to go back in. They put some kind of Impella, they call it. It's some kind of device or valve that they put into the arteries. And somehow it was bleeding. So Saturday, he went back into surgery. And he was in surgery for hours. It was like 9 o'clock and we still hadn't heard anything. And it was 2021. There was still COVID rules. We wanted to go to the hospital. We were debating whether it was like really that the hospital wasn't going to let us in, or was it our sister-in-law that she was like, she was trying to keep everybody away. And we didn't really know what was happening. And anyhow, so we all decided, okay, we're not going to go to the hospital. But then at 2 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, which was Saturday, Sunday morning, he died. They declared him dead. After the surgery, they said he was fine. He was going to recover. They sent them home. And then maybe 45 minutes later, they come back out and say that he died. It was just, the whole thing was like random.
Mm-hmm.
So we find this out Sunday morning. And mind you, I was very, very close with my sister-in-law as well. So she was only communicating with me.
Mm.
She didn't want to be texting everybody. So she was communicating with me and I was communicating with everyone else. And Sunday morning, she called me and my nephew called me that he had passed. And that's like the way it happened. And definitely then came the difficult part of telling my mom.
Mm-hmm. Was that left to you?
That was left to me. There were several of us there, so I made sure we were going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
My aunt was there and my other two brothers were there. But it was pretty bad. It was really horrible. And definitely we're all still in a state of shock, confused, denial, numb. We didn't know what was happening. It didn't make sense. And from there, just going back to what we were just talking about a little while ago, in terms of culture, my sister-in-law decided she didn't want to do a funeral.
Mm.
She was going to cremate him, which was fine if that's what she decided. But we wanted at least a few hours so that we can be able to view him.
Mm-hmm.
And she said no. And it felt like they went completely over the entire grieving process and straight into celebration of life.
Oh.
So the next thing that happened after that was 3 weeks later, we're in church celebrating my brother's life.
Mm.
And here is my mom and us, the siblings, sitting up front, that big picture of my brother and the altar, and my nephew and nieces speaking and the pastor speaking, and we're all just sitting there still numb. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking to myself, of course, we haven't really grieved. Like, mm-hmm. there hasn't been the opportunity to be able to. And I really believe that part of seeing somebody's body, as uncomfortable as that is part of the grieving process and acceptance and mm-hmm. being able to say, oh yeah, he's dead. He's gone. Right. Being able to see it with your eyes and acknowledging. And that never happened.
You never saw him.
Yeah. I never saw him again. I saw him that previous weekend just because they came over to my house and we had dinner. But if not, they were about an hour away from me. So we didn't see each other weekly. We saw each other maybe 18 months or so. But that Thursday, I spoke to him because that Saturday, he was having a poker game at his house, which he loved to have. And it was the brothers, the nephews, and a couple of their close friends from high school. And I don't like to play poker, but I would go hang out with my brothers and just be part of the group and hang out and have a cocktail and just chill. And I told them that I was going, and he asked me, what do you want to drink? What do you want me to buy you? So I told him, and that was our last conversation. He was excited about the poker game and that my kids were coming and a lot of the nephews were going to be there. So he was excited.
And that ended up being the day of the surgery.
That ended up being the day of the surgery.
So you mentioned culturally. I don't know if you want to say more about your culture and what death and your experience of that was like, because you mentioned that you didn't have that ability to process it in the way that you were familiar with.
Yeah. I think we've never done this celebration of life thing, for one, our family. And it's always been when someone does die that there is a funeral, there is a viewing, and someone gets buried. I know that before most people got buried, because that was more of the old Catholic way.
Mm-hmm.
And I know times have changed. So a lot of people do get cremated now, which is, it's fine. But I have been to funerals where they have 4 hours of viewing and then they cremate the person. I think that was the difference with what happened with my brother. And actually, now that I'm talking with you about it out loud, I'm not sure if it's culturally, because she's American. I think maybe it was more their discomfort with the whole entire grieving process and what that means. So I'm not sure if it's culture or not, but.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
I mean, my own brother was cremated, but we did have the viewing first. And so I think from a Catholic perspective, that was also unusual. Right? Things have shifted over time.
Yeah. It's interesting because now, like, Umberto's aunt just passed away and they're Catholic as well. So they had a small viewing and get cremated, but then get cremated and put into a mausoleum in the cemetery. Mm-hmm. So that kind of makes it okay for Catholics.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that I understand that, but okay.
Yeah, no, I asked my mom about that actually, because that's what happened with my brother. The ashes have to stay on Catholic grounds or something. They believe that.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
Yeah.
So you had that celebration of life 3 weeks after, and it didn't feel like a celebration.
No, it didn't feel like a celebration. It was incongruent to where we were at.
Mm-hmm.
And what we were feeling. And I think during this entire time, we're all going back and trying to make sense and trying to get information from her and trying to understand. And she completely disengaged from us and didn't really want too much conversation. The explanations were limited and we were confused. I mean, of course we knew he died, but what happened? What actually happened? Like, when did he get to the hospital? Why did it take so long for her to contact us? What happened in the hospital? What did they do? What was the procedure? We were all like, why can't we know these things? But we were all going back and forth dealing with all that. And I think what happened was, although my siblings were all frustrated, similarly like me, I was the only one that voiced it to her. And that didn't have a good outcome.
You mentioned you were close to her before.
Very close. We were very, very close. But we haven't spoken since not since Richard died, but yeah, 2 months after.
That's hard too.
Yeah.
Because that's a secondary loss, right? Losing mm-hmm. that relationship and all of the other relationships that you had there.
Yeah.
How did you spend those 3 weeks waiting for this celebration?
Extremely anxious. Me personally, yes. It was anxious. And then like I had a lot of anger. And I was frustrated. I was frustrated with my siblings because everybody wanted to play nice because they wanted to keep her on their good side. And I didn't want to. I was pissed. Actually, there was a part of me at some point I felt, I don't know that I even really want to go to this celebration flight. I'm mm-hmm. not sure what this even means. I really did go because of my mom and my siblings.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hi, I'm Dr. Angela Dean, host of the Broken Pack podcast. If you've lost a sibling, you viscerally understand the complexity of your loss and how isolating it can feel. Sibling loss is misunderstood. And that's why I created an in-person retreat called the Sibling Grief Refuge. It's happening this August 15th through the 18th near Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. This retreat will include grief-focused activities and sessions curated and facilitated by compassionate grief experts, including me. It's a space where your grief, your loss, and your sibling will be honored and understood. In addition to grief discussions, education, support, and togetherness, you will be tapping into your continuing bond with your sibling through multiple activities, such as going on a photo walk or sensory exploration and mindful walks. In our remembrance ceremony, you'll have further opportunity to honor your sibling, share your story, and hear about others' siblings. For more information, visit thebrokenpack.com/retreat or just head to thebrokenpack.com and click the sibling loss retreat link in the top menu. Spaces are limited, so secure your spot today. Let's walk this path of sibling grief together. Now back to the show. I know you mentioned you had support from friends. Was it in that immediate aftermath that you had support?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I called my friends immediately when it happened. I needed the support and I also needed to talk and flush this information out
mm-hmm.
and not be in my head. I think my concern was that I might be creating too many stories that are not true. So I wanted another mind to be with mine so that I can get feedback about what I was thinking. And
do you still have that kind of support?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah. I have a really strong... I've created that for myself here in Miami, and I really created a strong support, which I've never had in my life before. As a younger person, I never had that. And as a young adult, I never had that either. And I learned later in life that we can go through life without other people in our life, but I think life becomes a little bit harder.
Mm-hmm.
And then we suffer alone. And when we have people in our lives that we can share and talk about what we're feeling and thinking, it makes life really different.
Mm-hmm. Spoken like a true therapist.
It's
an important lesson to learn. Probably not something you learn in grad school. It sounds like you learned it by living.
Yeah, I definitely didn't learn that in grad school.
Yeah. Mm. Are there things that you wish you had known then? Or support that you wish you would have had that was different? It sounds like you had great support, but anything additional?
I don't think so. For myself, I felt like I had plenty of support. I don't know about my sibling.
Mm-hmm.
But besides this, the support that I had, I think I've talked to you about this before in the past, that I'm the co-facilitator at the Hero's Journey Summer mm-hmm. Men's Intensive. And that happened right after the celebration of life. Mm. So even there, I was able to really cry and talk about what was happening inside of me, allow myself to breathe. Where in the celebration of life, it didn't feel like we were allowed to do that. There was no space for grieving.
Because it was called a celebration.
Right. It's a celebration of life, which means we're going to celebrate this person.
Versus a funeral where you're permitted to cry. It's always been an interesting dynamic of words there.
Yeah. Well, I thought a celebration of life was, let's say not now, 2 years later, a celebration of life would feel appropriate to me. Because we're talking about this person that died in their life and how they lived. And like, that sounds like a celebration of life.
Are you able to do that now? Are you able to celebrate him?
I think we've done it. I've done it mostly with the siblings or with my mom. And when we get together, we talk about him, we mention him, and we talk about certain moments. Richard was a feisty guy. He was, they used to call him in Spanish, they used to call him El Colorado, which means the red one. Because he used to get really angry when he was a boy and he would turn red. He was very, very fair skinned, so he would get really red. And it was like his trademark. And I think that level of anger propelled him to work really, really hard. He was a really hard worker. And when we were young, he told me, I'm going to be a millionaire. And he was when he died. He worked really, really hard and made a lot of money. And he was definitely like, he was Mr. Traditional for sure. Traditional guy. Him and Julie have been together since they were 15 or 16. Mm-hmm. But they were like high school sweethearts that got married, put together. Definitely a family man. Very frugal.
What do you miss most about him?
So when I called, if I called Richard, I'm picking up my phone, checking sure. Let's say if I called him and I had my phone like this and he picks up, he would go, I'd put this one on the app. He would go, hello. And you're on the phone. The hell? I'm like, Richard, do you realize that you yell? Can you just say hello? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize it. It didn't matter, Angela. He would do it again and again.
Do you think it was intentional?
I don't think so, because I discussed it once with his wife and she's, oh, he does that all the time. He does that to me and he does that to other people. So I think it was just like he would just pick up the phone like that. Oh. And it's interesting because
You held the phone away from your ear.
Listeners
couldn't see that, but you had the phone away from your ear so you wouldn't be deafened by his screaming.
Exactly. My eardrum wouldn't explode. But I think that was one thing. I think the other thing was we had a way with just being like, he wasn't scared of life. He wasn't scared of life. He wasn't scared of people. He would go out to a restaurant. He would go up to the maitre d' and say, hey, we have reservations for tonight at 8:00. And she was like, I don't have your name down. Are you sure? I called it in. You should have my name down there. Oh my God. Are you serious, dude? You would do stuff like
that. Doing that.
Yeah, I didn't have that quality.
But you admired it in him.
Yeah.
So are there things that you would like our listeners to know about sibling loss specifically?
Well, I think that it feels a little like we're not given the place in terms of being siblings and having a loss that should be. I think most of the time it's always about the parents and the partner and person, kids primarily. And we're kind of like just a sibling. And I think that's like the biggest thing that I can mention, and how there's definitely a feeling of loneliness in that process. Even though I had support and I had people around and my family was around, it felt like I was grieving by myself.
That's interesting, given that you have other siblings. How were those relationships? You're grieving the same person, but differently.
Yeah.
And you're still sibling.
Yeah. Well, definitely we're different in the way we all process and have dealt with everything that's happened. Clearly, I'm probably the one that expresses the most feelings out of the group. But yeah, it was hard. It's been hard for all of us. It's been really, really hard. I think the other thing also is, like you mentioned earlier, and I just remember, like, how do I honor or how do I still celebrate him? What I've done and what my brothers have done and my sisters, we've gone to places that he really loved, like restaurants that he really loved. And there's this place here that we used to go to often. Since we didn't live close, we would meet there. It's up in Fort Lauderdale, so it's a halfway point. And I remember going there with Umberto and we sat at the bar and I couldn't stop crying. It was rain. So I think it's those things.
Do those catch you off guard sometimes? Connections?
Well, I think the hard part is because we're not like supposed to be crying in public, right? We're not supposed to do that. So
we being
we mean society,
humans, society, or men, exactly. Or
probably folks. men, and yeah, humans, and everybody's acting or going about life if they're happy every single moment. So we're not supposed to express negative emotions. And maybe that's also part of my upbringing, because that's definitely part of my family and the way we. Brought up, but definitely there. So it catches me off guard because here I am sitting at a bar and the bartender's in front of us. My tears are just coming out. Like I couldn't control myself. And I get a little sloppy when I cry. So it's pretty obvious that it's happening.
So were you trying to hide it?
I was trying to hide it.
Unsuccessfully.
Unsuccessfully, yeah. Took control.
Has your partner been supportive through this process?
Extremely. He's been extremely. I mean, he's been in my life for almost 30 years. So he's known my sibling, Richard, since we're all in our 20s. So yeah, he's definitely a part of the family and everybody considers him a part of the family. So he's definitely been supportive. He lost his brother during COVID.
Oh.
Brother died of COVID. So maybe the year before Richard died, his brother had died as well. So, yeah.
I've known you since before this podcast, right? So I think that you would have been supportive of him, but I wonder if that felt different after losing your own brother. The way that you were able to support him, does it change how you wish you would have supported him?
Yeah, I think I wish I would have been a little bit more caring. I think is the word. It was also a tricky time. It was during COVID, so he didn't get to see his brother either. And he was cremated, his brother. It definitely, at that time, there was no way you can go into any kind of building, so that wasn't happening. And then his brother's wife got the ashes, and they got rid of the ashes and didn't tell them either, and it was similar. And I feel like I did support him, but after now thinking about it, there probably should have been more understanding of how difficult it is to lose someone and not be able to see them again before they're laid to rest.
Right.
I think that's like a big discussion in terms of, do we have to view people or we don't have to view people? And I don't know, for me and my experience and what happened, I think it is important. When my dad died 4 years ago, I actually walked into the hospital and they were taking him to the ICU. So I went with him. My dad died there while I was at the ICU with him. So I was able to see him, right? It's very different. Like you see the person. So maybe for my brother's wife and kid, they were there. So they saw him. They saw that he was dead. And you see that and you go home. And then the acceptance is there. Okay, he's gone. You saw it with your own eyes, where it felt more like, for me and both Umberto, that this person is here, but now they're gone. That's it. Like they've disappeared, like they vanished.
Yeah. I think there is some value in that for most people, being able to see the person that is deceased. It gives you that reminder. For myself, and I don't think I've shared this publicly, I'm about to. I took a photo of my brother. I think I shared that with you in the casket because I knew that it wasn't going to feel real. And I have gone back to that when it feels like it's not real, just to remind myself. But you didn't have that opportunity.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to share before I ask the last question that I have?
I think that when we lose people that we love, it's a tricky bag of a lot of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely don't think it's five stages of people are off. It's more rage and guilt and envy and shame and sadness and identification mm-hmm. with that person, and just this huge bombardment of emotions and feelings and traveling back into your mm-hmm. life, particularly like with a sibling. I found myself and my siblings as well traveling back to our childhood, talking about our childhood, talking about our life together, talking about specific moments mm-hmm. Where we would get into fights with other people and, you know, in school and like all of the things that happen in childhood, and which there's pleasure in that and there's also pain in it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about when that happens, it almost feels like the soul has just kind of like, it almost feels now like when we think back and we come back into this moment, it's like person feels like so far away.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, like they're gone.
So being able to explore that story gives it its place and time.
Mm-hmm.
There is this theory on grief that we go between loss orientation and restoration orientation, those ideas, and that grief is going back and forth. And I hear that in what you're saying, is that you have to have this balance of loss and moving forward and building grief into your life.
For sure.
So what would you like mental health professionals to know about grief? Or what do you think would have been helpful in your training that you didn't have?
Well, I think I've said a little bit about it early on around, I think mostly understanding that, like, for one, that we just can, not sure that we really process loss, fully process it. And because somehow, or if it, also the, like what I said earlier around mourning forever, like in mm-hmm. some ways we mourn forever, and how like we don't talk about that in school, not the way we talk about yeah. mourning and grieving, and that somehow it's going to start, we're going to have a loss and then it's going to end. And that's not true. So yeah, I would wish that we would be more realistic around emotions and feelings and really being human. Like, mm-hmm. why can't we just be human and be allowed to express ourselves and cry publicly and talk about the things that really matter to us and the things that are really important, like the people mm-hmm. that we lost or things that really matter to us in life. I don't think we do enough of that.
Well, right. So it's that whole idea of someone says, how are you doing? And you're not supposed to actually answer that question.
Right.
You're just supposed to say, I'm fine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm always here if you ever need to chat and cry here in Pittsburgh or on the phone. All right. My last question is, what are some of your favorite memories of you and Richard?
Well, definitely his wedding night and me being his best man and proposing a toast. And then the other one was, this was a really long time ago. We went to Captiva Island, which is on the west coast of Florida. And it was just like couples. It was like four couples or five couples. And we rented a house, big house on the ocean. It was beautiful. It was the first time that we had done anything like that. And I had never eaten lobster. And he insisted that I was going to eat lobster. And I was like, I don't want to eat lobster. I don't like it. And so anyways, so we spent the entire, this was like a weekend. This particular day, everybody's drinking all day long. We go out to dinner and everybody's drunk. And my brother orders me a lobster. And he's like pretty much forcing me to eat it, which I did because he bought it and I felt like I had to eat it. But that was the first time that I had lobster.
Did you like it?
It's okay. I'm not running back to it. So
it tastes like
butter. All you're doing is dipping it in butter and it tastes like butter more than anything else. So I'm like, okay, what's the point? I'm eating butter.
Do you ever eat lobster to stay connected to him?
No.
No, not going to do that.
No.
Well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed our conversation today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. Our theme song was written by Joe Millwood and Brian Dean and was performed by Joe Millwood. If you would like more information on The Broken Pack, go to our website, thebrokenpack.com. Be sure to sign up for our newsletter, Wild Grief, to learn about opportunities and receive exclusive information and grieving tips for subscribers. Information on that, our social media, and on our guests can be found in the show notes wherever you get your podcasts. Please like, follow, subscribe, and share. Thanks again.
You're second guessing, oh, you never know, you just never know.